on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. It is May 7th, 2015. And, of course, we're here to fill in the gaps, try to fill in the gaps, give you some ideas, share our thoughts, our perspectives, give you some financial investing information, and maybe answer some questions. So I'm glad you're here. It really makes a more pleasant, more informative show, more entertaining show if you become part of it. Now, you've heard Justin and I talking about our risk analysis tool. You know, I every time I meet with somebody, I analyze their risks profile already. I've been doing it for so many years, it's kind of automatic. But now there's a tool that kind of measures your own risk that we use. And everybody wants to do that. We want to kind of put a number to it. And it's one of the tools we offer for free. It's on our website. You can take, you know, it's a few questions and it's trying to analyze your risk tolerance. But, you know, it's a question of how much, what your attitude about risk is. And to it's a matter of matching up your investments with the risk that you want. That's what it's all about. And once we do that, once we know what that is, then you could be comfortable, and then we can manage your money with those goals in mind. Now, we always are prepared to navigate the market. You know, the market changes all the time. And what really is required is you to be an all-seasons investor. You can't just say, well, this is what I am, and I'll stay this way forever, because the market changes. It does change. Things change. Companies that really were very solid 1 year, 5 years later, could be out of business. You can't just ignore. Now, you can invest in some core stocks that will last years and decades. And we all know who they are. They're the Exxon Mobils of the world, Johnson & Johnson's and AT&T. Yeah, you could do that. But, you know, those are your core holdings with, and you focus on dividends in those. But, you know, you got to understand your the environment that you're in. So, you know, we're looking to produce optimum returns, and really the lion's share of investors who find this approach the most appropriate and productive is those who are looking for growth, and they want some protection against the downside. This allows you to be aggressive in bull market phases and then transition a bit to defensive periods. You know, the well-rounded investor has to consider shorting the market, not the entire market, but a hedging strategy, which can involve shorting or involving high cash levels or owning assets that don't follow the market, the stock prices, stock market per se, that maybe go in a different direction. That helps reduce risk and diversify your portfolio. I mean, I wish it was easy. It's just not. It never has been, it's not going to be, and it takes a lot of work. So maybe we can help you find the appropriate strategy for you. And, you know, we really definitely want to find what kind of risk profile you like, because we have programs for high-risk people, low-risk people. It depends on what you are and what you want. So we're here to steer you along if we can, try to get you going in the right direction. And this hour, of course, is yours. You can ask any question you want. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, and we're live right now, Monday through Friday, and our number is 888-99-CHART. We're going to go to Cherie Fremont first. Let's do that. Hi, Cherie. Cherie?
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Okay. Hey, tomorrow is the big unemployment number.
Yep.
And so what is your expectations and how market will react if the number comes more than 200 or less than 200?
You know, I think the market will react better if it's less than 200. I think if it's too big of a number, the market won't like it. And the reason why I say that, Cherie, is because it seems like if economic numbers are too good, people are looking at the Fed as raising rates sooner, and the stock market doesn't like raising rates, even though they shouldn't really worry about it too much. They still do. So bad economic news, and I'm not, when I say bad, I don't mean recession like bad. I'm talking about just maybe 150 to 175,000 jobs may mean that the market will react positive. But Sheree, it's always difficult. Anything over 250, I don't think the market's going to like it.
Yeah, but I mean, even if interest rates go up, I mean, at the most, Fed is going to do is 0.25%,
right.
And that should be really positive because that shows the economy is doing well.
It should.
And that's why the rate is going up.
I agree with you 100%, Sheree. I think we need to get off, we meaning the investment community, need to get off this paranoid thing about, whoa, if they raise the rate 0.25%, oh my God, that's terrible. No, it's not. It's not terrible, but the market won't like it initially. It won't. But it shouldn't care because it won't. It doesn't mean that the stock market's going to crash just because they raise it 0.25%. There's more worries than just that. I mean, you know. Anyways, I appreciate the call, Sheree. Thank you for the call. I do. Thank you. Yeah, will the market go up? Remember, the jobs report for last month is out tomorrow. And the ADP number came out, was it yesterday? And it's, I don't know, 160,000 or so private sector jobs, and they're looking for well over 200 for total for the official report tomorrow, because ADP only counts private jobs, where the official number counts private and public sector jobs. But ADP is not always right either. Matter of fact, even the official numbers are not always right. But it gives us a guide, okay? That's about as best as you can expect. Are there still opportunities for dollar-based investors to potentially achieve gains in non-U.S. currencies? Currency trading. The case for global currency investing. This is tricky, and it's difficult. Don't think it's a simple thing. It's not. But that's going to be one of our main talking points today. And what will halt this rally? We just talked to Sheree about, you know, a jobs report. I don't think so. I don't think that's going to halt this rally, but I have something I think that will. And this was an article produced. This is where I got this idea from, and I was thinking about it, and I'm thinking, you know, this will halt the rally. I don't think it necessarily be this year, but I'm going to talk about it. Credit card use is at a four-year low in the first quarter. Credit card use. Now, they're talking about revolving credit card use. So what is that? How bad is it? Why isn't being at a low? Doesn't everybody have a credit card? So that's where we're talking about that. And will the Apple Watch work? In other words, I'm not saying will it keep time and will it do what it says it's doing. I'm saying as a wearable device, will it work? Will it be something that everybody's going to want? Because for Apple, the Apple Watch, if it sells 10 million of them, 20 million, 30 million, that means absolutely nothing to Apple. They need to sell hundreds of millions of them. But I'm talking about, will the whole idea work? And I want to discuss that. I want to develop that thinking and maybe come up with a thesis for investing based on what might happen in the future. Those are the things we're going to talk about, unless you call and you ask and you want to talk about something else. Be happy to do that. Want to do that. The market was up today, up 83 points on the Dow, 26 points on the NASDAQ, 8 points on the S&P. And do you realize that if you're looking at the S&P, that you are almost exactly where you were at the very end of the December? So we've gone from like the last trading day in September to now, haven't moved one bit flat for the S&P 500. So you had 5 months of just churning. Well, tomorrow, if the market's up, we'll be positive. If the market's down, I'll be negative for that period of time. Isn't that interesting? Why? Are we looking at a bear market? What's the definition of bear market? Bear market is when a market falls, right? Well, before it falls, it doesn't have to be a straight drop. It could be a slow process, like what we're seeing now. You know, we're not seeing any movement up. Not for the S&P 500, which is the broader index. The NASDAQ is up. So, but the NASDAQ's not up a lot, but it is up. And the Dow is just about the same. just about the same, maybe even a little weaker than the S&P 500. And I'm asking, bear markets start with weakness, and you got to have weakness, and then it falls. But it doesn't have to be. It could be a trickle down. It could be a bear market via sector rotation going down. It could be a steep fall. It could be a capitulation at some point, where it just collapses because it's not going up. It takes different forms. So I'm just asking the question. We're moving into the weaker part of the year, and then as we move towards summer, and I'm just asking the question. I'm not overly bearish, but I'm not over bullish either. I mean, I just think we need to try to recognize what's going on. The market has its own language. It tries to speak to you, and if you're paying close attention, maybe you'll hear it. Maybe you'll understand it. Most people just listen to the news, and that's about it. But, in charts, in fundamentals, and technical analysis, you try to develop a rapport with the language it's speaking to you. And I think it's saying, be careful. That's what I think it's saying. Be very careful. But I don't want you to think I'm just super negative. I'm not. I'm just saying that keep your eyes open, and, might be a good time to have a few hedges in. Hedges meaning protection against the downside. Don't go crazy, but maybe just put some in. I was in San Jose yesterday for individual meetings with our listeners and reviewing portfolios. It was kind of fun. I met with 6 people. By the end of the day, my voice was starting to go, but it came back. I'm getting used to it, I guess, after doing it for I don't know how many bazillion years. I guess I should be used to it. And, of course, I will be up, have other dates. I'm going to be back up in the Bay Area. That's certainly going to be true within the next 30 days or so. But I'll be at Data Point on May 13th and then San Diego on May 20th. So if you want to meet with me, I'll be in those 2 places. To secure a time, whether it's in the Bay, San Diego, or in our office at Data Point, you could just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment. 888-992-4278. We're going to go to Sean in New York. He's listening to us on podcast. I appreciate you calling, Sean. Thank you.
Hi, Steve. Thank you very much. Hope you guys are doing well in California.
Yes.
I have 2 quick questions.
Sure.
First is there any way for average investors like myself to know if a CEO or director of a company either own or bought a significant number of shares of that company?
Yes, there is. Matter of fact, he has to divulge that. It's required to divulge that publicly. Okay? Now, the question for you, Sean, is, where do I find that information? Right? That's really what you want to know. And I would suggest you go to, there's a couple of websites, finviz.com, F-I-N-W-I-Z, Finviz.
Could you repeat that?
It's finviz.com, Finviz. I think that's a website. But I get it because I pay for it. I pay for a lot of information, so I can find it almost any time. Affordable software that you could get it through is MarketSmith, MarketSmith.com. That provides the information as well. So you can get it. Okay.
So finviz.com and
finviz.com.
Got it. Uh-huh. Second question is your thought on Lyndall Basel Industries, ticker symbol is LYB.
Okay, I'm going to have to pick that up after this quick break, but I will pick it up. If you want to hold, that's great. If you don't, that's okay too. I will talk about it. LYD. LYD. Popular items in our Invest Talk Insiders commodity ETF list. You got to be an insider. It's free. Sign up. It's really simple. Just go to investtalk.com. Sign up to be an insider. You can do it for free. Investtalk.com.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, these tools can help young adults invest with confidence and start building wealth. 10 great investing sites and apps for millennials. That's our talking point for Friday, May 8th. We hope you'll join us then.
Sean, are you still there?
I'm here.
Thank you. You want to talk about Lindell Basil Industries, LYB as a boy?
That is correct.
Are you thinking about buying it, or do you already own it?
Buying it.
Okay. I like it. Okay. Lindell Basil Industries, it's a big company, $48 billion. It's a Netherlands-based company, so it manufactures polypropylene compounds and polymers and ethylene, those kinds of things. Okay, so it has is very big. It has really good earnings. Earnings are going to be up 6%. Remember, it's a $48 billion company, so it's big. The sales in the most recent quarter fell, and the quarter before that that fell. But the price of the stock is fairly. It's $101 stock going to make $9.92. So that's a 10 PE, 10, 11 PE. I think that's pretty decent.
Yep.
Return on equity is 44, and the estimates are increasing for this company. Not decreasing, increasing. And I read a couple of articles while we were on the break about it, and I think, now it has moved up strongly from around $70, $71 back in December to $101 now, so it has moved up already nicely. So I kind of like it, Sean. On any weakness, I think it's a buy, not a sell. A buy on any weakness. So I do like it.
At this point, you think at this point is a good time to pick up some?
Well, it fell $1.47 today, so it was down about 1.5% today. I think I would give it a few days and see if it pulls down a little bit more for you. I would really love to see you buy it right around $90, $91. If you could pick it up there, I think that's ideal.
Okay.
Maybe,
thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks for the call, Sean. Maybe I'll buy half now. If it's a long-term hold, it looks like a core holding to me. Maybe it has a 44% return on equity. It has not too much debt. It has a lot going for it. Okay? It does. It really does. And oil prices have been weak lately, so remember what their input cost is. How do they make these ethylenes? They make them from usually natural gas or oil. Prices are fairly cheap now, so their profits should increase, I think. I have to do a lot more work on it to make sure, but that's what I think. Currency trading. And I've gotten a lot of calls about currency trading. I think people fall in love with, things go in and out of popularity. And currency trading about a year or two ago was pretty darn popular. I don't know how popular it is today. Currency trading is difficult. Okay, the dollar's been strong. We all know that. But currency trading is always done in pairs, right? It's the dollar versus something else. And it's always relative, right? The dollar's really strong. It has been strong. Recently, it's weakened a little bit, but it's still very strong as a currency compared to the euro, compared to the euro. But well, why is that? Well, because our Fed is thinking about raising rates, and every other sovereign national bank, every other central banker is in the process of trying to weaken our currency so they can have better trade exports. We're not. So that's what made our dollar gain strength hugely last year, and it started to lose some of that strength in the middle of March. And that's probably going to be good for us, by the way. One of the problems we've had in the first quarter was our imports jumped strongly, and our exports only went up 0.9%, whereas imports were up 7-8%. And that's going to be a drag on our GDP. But when you're talking about currency trading, you have to think of more than just the currency. You got to think about the economy of the currency that you're talking about. You got to think about the relationships of the economic strengths and weaknesses. And you got to think about forward looking, just like the stock market. You can't think about it in today's terms. You got to think about 6 months from now, 9 months. Well, is the euro going to get stronger in the next 6 or 9 months? Is Europe going to get stronger? Is the economy going to get stronger? And that is stronger than ours. If theirs gets stronger, but ours gets stronger too, and in fact, if ours grows faster than theirs, do you think the dollar will fall in relationship to the euro? Probably not. See, so you got to think in terms of pair. It's difficult. Because you got the knowledge that you need is worldwide if you're going to trade currencies. Now, there's other ways to take advantage of currency swings other than just trading currencies. You can trade stocks, foreign stocks. Because remember, when you buy a foreign stock here in the United States, you're using the U.S. dollar to go buy a foreign stock. So you translate into that foreign currency and buy that stock on that foreign exchange. You could do that. And then when you sell it in that foreign exchange, you got to translate it back into the U.S. dollars. Isn't that currency trading? Well, that's currency trading plus buying stocks, right? It can get very complex. And then if you're talking about, well, what about an international stock that's domesticated in a foreign country? I'll give you an example. How about Petrobras in Brazil? You can go buy that stock in Brazil. You got to change your dollars to pesos and go buy it. Okay, and then when you translate it back, well, do you think first the oil company, Petrobras, is finally bottom and will move up? Do you think Brazil's economy is finally going to start getting strength and will their currency will strengthen against our dollar? Those two things you got to think and consider. Come up next half hour on Invest Talk 101. You've heard us talk about cyclical stocks. How about a good definition of what that means? Charlie in Long Beach has a question about a stock. John in Burbank wants to talk about reverse mortgages. What's your question? I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART. Your questions always come first. Always. Here's one came in. 888-99-CHART. Charlie called from Long Beach.
Question on reverse mortgage. Does it make sense to take that money and invest it in, say, income property?
Well, you know, that is a good question, okay? Because you know what a reverse mortgage is? A reverse mortgage is where you borrow money against your house, okay? You borrow money against a house, but you never have to pay it back until you sell that house. And you can't get a reverse mortgage unless you're older. I think it was, 64, 65? I don't know. There's an age. And you can only get so much of a percentage and more than, you got to have 50% of value. I don't know. You got to have a lot of equity. And they'll loan you a certain amount. You can do anything with that money that you want. And you can go and buy another property with it. You can do that. Yes. And then you never have to. Now you have two properties. And you never have to pay the loan on the first property as long as you live in the house. You move in the house, you have to pay off the reverse mortgage. Try to remember, the reverse mortgage are kind of expensive to get because you don't have to pay any monthly payments. But you've got, so they charge a good couple of, a good hefty point or two up front. And it's expensive. And you got to pay interest on the money, but you don't have to ever pay until you sell your house or you die in your house. So can you use the money? You get to use that money from reverse mortgage for anything you want. Anything. They have no control of what you can use that money for. You don't even have to tell them what you're going to use it for before you do it. Interesting, huh? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What will halt this rally? We're still in a rally, even though the markets move sideways. Moving sideways is not in the multi-year rally we have been in since 2009. I mean, it's making that rally look weaker and weaker as time goes by, for this year. We're in the fifth month of the year. But it's still in that rally. But what really could really cause a rally to fall into a bear market? Well, there are really several things that are all related to could do that. For instance, if our economy gains strength fundamentally, you know the Fed is all set to raise rates, right? Now, maybe the Fed raising rates alone may not destroy this rally, but if the European economy and the Japan economy, both of which have been revised to be gaining strength, not weakening with their QEs, what if all three, the Federal Reserve, the ECB, and the, I don't know what they call the Japanese Central Bank, what if all three start to tighten money at the same time or approximately the same time? That, to me, would probably put the brakes on our bull market. Because if all of them are, you know, economies. Remember, when economies start to do well, that's what Federal Reserves do. They want to slow it down. They don't want it to do too well. They don't want inflation to get a hold too much. They don't, you know, they start to raise rates. And the Federal Reserve is famous, not our own, not only our Federal Reserve, all of them, are famous for not getting it right or being too early or too late. It's famous for that. So that could put the kibosh on our rally. Remember, the stock market looks forward. So when they start seeing things looking up, and this is, remember, at the beginning of the show, the guy talked to me, I forgot who he's called, about the job market in a job report for tomorrow, and whether it be too good of a number or too bad of a number. And I said, too good a number may mean the market will fall. And if the number is kind of weak, that may be positive for the market because the Fed won't be so anxious to raise rates. Interesting. That's one of the reasons why I like doing this, because it is fascinating to me. Maybe it's not fascinating to everybody, but it is to me. I find it very interesting. Well, 888-99-CHARTER is our number. You can call us anytime you want. Be happy to talk to you. But right now we're going to go to InvestTalk 101. What is a cyclical stock and why should you care? What do you care what a cyclical stock is? Well, if you're an investor in the market, you should know. Investopedia gives us a definition of a cyclical stock. I really like Investopedia. It's a great website if you don't know what terminology it means when you hear it on the radio or the TV or written. You can go to Investopedia and type it in. They'll define it for you. And a cyclical stock is an equity whose price is affected by the ups and downs of the economy. Cyclical stocks technically are associated with companies that sell discretionary items where consumers don't, you know, maybe they don't have to buy it if they don't want to. And if the economy stinks, they don't buy it. They don't have to. That's a cyclical stock. Now, you might want to think about, well, what's a counter-cyclical stock? What would that be? Or what's a consumer staple stock? Consumer staples, those things, you know, like shampoo and toothpaste, they always sell them. They sell recession, no recession, and not attached to the economy. So cyclical stocks are going to rise and fall with the business cycle. And some folks think that that can be predictable because of that. They can be, maybe to some degree they can. And we're talking about stocks like car makers, airlines, furniture retailers, clothing stores, hotels, restaurants. You can see it right now in the auto industry. People are buying autos heavily for the last year or two because they didn't buy cars for a long time. Cars are really old and the economy is doing okay. And jobs are being produced, so car companies are selling good cars. Now, on the other hand, in a recession, how long do you think those car sales would go? I mean, how strong will they grow then? They won't. They'll shrink. That's InvestTalk 101. Do you have a question about cyclical stocks? It's easy. Get through to me. You can call a number, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. And why don't you give it a try right now?
Gaining knowledge in the investment world is a never-ending process, and we do have some books for you to help in the cause. Look on our recommended book list. They're really essential books for the investor. See the list and make a purchase through Amazon if you'd like, right there on investtalk.com.
Hi, this is Charlie from Long Beach, California. I had a question on a stock, California Resources Corporation. The symbol is CRC. I bought this a few months back for a price of $5.64, and it's gone up quite nicely. I bought it because it was a spinoff of Occidental Petroleum when things were looking bad in the oil sector. And my question is, what do you see ahead for this stock? It's been dipping down a little bit recently. The other thing is, what do you see as a value of this particular security? Because this shows, as I believe, has a PEG ratio of 0.15 in Yahoo.com, and a lot of the other oil securities have negative PEG ratios or maybe a very high one. Anyways, I'd like your feedback. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Just so you know, a PEG ratio, PEG, is price to earnings growth, PE to growth. Okay, we don't we use GPE, just the opposite, but it's the same thing. This is California Resources engaged in exploration and production of oil and gas exclusively in California. That California part worries me a lot because California is very California laws, rules, regulations are very toxic to any natural resource exploration, especially oil and gas, because of its very liberal bent against it. So I don't care for that. I don't really like this stock at all. It went from, it was spun off about $7 a share, went down to $4. In the recent move, it went up to $9.70. Today, it's at $7.54, down almost 9% today. Why don't I like it? Because it's not going to make money this year, and it's not going to make money next year. Sales growth is falling. There is no peg. I don't know where Yahoo's getting that. My software is telling me there's no growth. There's no earnings. There was earnings in 2014, but not in 2015, not 2016. So there's no reason why this company won't go back down to $4. I don't, why not? And I don't like it because where it does exclusive business in California, if that's where it's going to do its business, that's a very hostile environment for any business, all business in California, but especially oil exploration businesses. It's just hostile. It's going to have a heck of a time. So if that's the focus, and it is California Resources, CRC is the symbol, I wouldn't be involved in this stock at all. I would not. If you have a profit, take it, in my opinion, and run. Go find something else better. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Credit card use is at a four-year low, according to the first quarter numbers, first quarter. That's down 0.3%, the lowest first quarter since 2011. Now, this is how statistics can really get confusing. What are they talking about? They're talking about revolving credit. Revolving credit is different than just other kinds of credit. Because overall credit in the United States has gone up 7.4% annual rate. So that means, and I wonder how much of that, because it didn't say when I was looking this up, but I wonder how much of the student loans. But maybe a lot of it is mortgages. That's not a bad credit. But March, which was interesting, March all by itself was up 5.9% for revolving credit card use. The problem is in January, February, it fell 3.3% each of those months. So it's still down for the first quarter, but it looks like it rebounded in the third quarter. Now, January, February, why was it down? Could it be weather related? Consumers are still very wary about using credit cards on a revolving basis. They're not really comfortable yet. They're not comfortable with their jobs or the economy maybe it's just a changing appetite for a revolving credit. Remember, non-revolving credit is up. And that's up significantly, 7.9% in March. So it's not all credit, just credit card use. Which surprises me. You know why it's surprising? Because there's a lot of those credit cards. I use my credit card all the time. And the reason I do it is because I get money back. I get this, every time I buy it. I pay off my credit every month. But I use it all the time because I want that 3%. I'm getting 3% off any purchase I make. That pays for half the taxes, sales tax. it pays for stuff. So I would think that because of those kinds of credit cards, it would be up. But people are just not that comfortable with it. There's a new way to get into the conversation, by the way. You can send your question or comment via Twitter to @KPPFinancial, @KPPFinancial. That's Invest Talk with two T's, by the way. If you're listening to Invest Talk right now, but you can send me a Twitter @KPPFinancial. You can get your question to us, too, the same way, old-fashioned way, by calling 888-99-CHART, and you can reach us right now.
A quick reminder, if there's a term that you hear mentioned on the program but you're unclear about what it means or you have a question about it, we want you to ask. It's very likely that you're not the only one with that same question. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Mike. I listen on the podcast from Akron, Ohio. And I'm a beginning investor. I'm wondering where's a good place to set up a Roth IRA? And also, if I do set up a Roth IRA, is that something that I can hand over to you guys to manage it for me? Thank you.
Manage Roth IRAs, regular IRAs, rollover IRAs, you name it, an IRA, we manage it. I like the IRA business because there's no tax consequence. I love not having to worry about capital gains taxes. Taxes on dividends. I just love the IRA business. So yeah, we manage all kinds, you know, besides trusts and individual accounts and joint accounts and, you know, corporate accounts. We don't have just a few corporate accounts. Most of our business is individuals, and probably half of that individual business is IRA business of some kind. So yeah, love to handle that. You can just give our office a call, send me an email, whatever you want. We'll sit down and talk about it. You know, I met with 6 people yesterday, 1 client and 5 new people. And it really is interesting. They had some really, yeah, I really do enjoy meeting the people because everybody has a different, you know, different story to tell, a different life story. And they're really interesting. I think they're really interesting. How people, you know, some are sad. They're not all great stories, but some are really great stories. But all of them are fairly interesting. And they're all a kind of a puzzle, which is kind of fun to figure out, well, how can we make this retirement life, even if you're working in retirement. I talked to a gentleman yesterday. He's never going to retire. Well, all the power to him. I'm not big on the traditional retirement. To me, is dead. Or you stop working. No. Remember my definition. You stop what you have to do and go do what you want to do. But make sure there's something you want to do. Don't stop what you have to do and then have nothing. That's crazy. That you'll be bored, you'll just wither and die. So just stop what you have to do and go do what you want to do. I don't even care if what you want to do is golfing or fishing or just sitting in your back lawn. Make sure it's something you want to do, and make sure it's something you want to do in your retirement forever. Or find something more active and interesting to do. We're coming up on our last segment of the program. Let's try to get your question in. Call us now at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Remember, if you have a question you'd like to ask Steve or Justin, you can ask them personally. The invitation still stands. Just click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin right there on investtalk.com, and they will get back to you.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, I want to talk about Apple Watch. Now, I'm not talking in the way I've discussed it before, where how much, how many watches you think they're going to sell, and how much money you're going to make, and is it going to do well? I want to broaden that out a little bit and ask instead, what is the future going to be like concerning wearable devices? Wearable devices, electronic devices. Do you believe, not just Apple Watch, do you believe that there's a future for wearable devices? And if that's the case, how big is that market going to be? And another question I'll ask, do you believe from this day forward that a watch that you wear is only going to tell you time? You only wear it for one reason, because it's a nice piece of jewelry and it'll tell you time. Do you think that that is going to be the standard? Or do you believe you're going to have a wearable device on your wrist that will tell you time, weather, tell you, I don't know, tides, tell you whatever it is you're interested in? You know, my answer to this is, I think the wearable industry is going to explode. I just can't tell you if it's going to be Apple Watch. I think it's going to be huge. Huge. Think about your phone right now. Don't you carry it around all the time? And have you noticed that everybody is looking at their phone all the time? Now, when they're looking at their phone, does it have to be a telephone? And what are they looking at? Are they just looking at instant messages, emails? Can they do it on their wearable device, on their wrist, or their, wherever? As opposed to, maybe it's not going to be a watch. Maybe it's going to be just a flat screen that you kind of wear on your wrist. That's small. See, I don't know. I think you have to think of this. Is this area going to be like the music industry where Apple destroyed CDs and everything? And now you have this little tiny thing that you can listen to music with. Okay, now you can listen to music on your phone. Maybe you're going to listen to music on your watch. Pull out the little earplugs and put it in your ear. Listen to music. I'm just saying, wearable devices, I think, are going to explode. Who's going to be the most successful wear? I don't know. But I think it's something that you, as an investor, might want to investigate. I think Apple could set the standard like it did with the phone, and all of a sudden Google came in with their Google phone software, and boom, yeah, it's huge. Everybody has these kinds of phones. Remember the flip phone? It's gone, dead. Anyways, wearable devices. Where's that going? Who's going to benefit? Where should we invest? Let's get one more question for this hour. Paul called 888-99-CHART.
My question is, you use the terminology GPE in your radio broadcast. What does that mean? What are the words represented by the initials GPE? Thank you very much.
Now, the other person, a couple of callers ago, PEG, right? Price earnings to growth. We use GPE, growth to the price earnings ratio. And we'd like to see it two or higher. That means we like to see the growth rate of the company twice the PE ratio. Now, sometimes you'll see them much bigger than that, and sometimes much less. It all depends on the type of company you're dealing with. But what it means is we have a philosophy at KPP Financial. We like to buy value plus growth. And that's why GPE is important. We want growth of the company to be higher than PE. The PE can be very high, price to earnings ratios, PE. But as long as the growth is twice that, it's relatively not that high. So that's what GP is, growth to price earnings ratio. So we like it 2 or higher. And if you flip it over, PEG ratio, PEG, that means you want to see a 0.5 or lower. It's just the inverse. Okay? Before we close for the hour, our intent is to help every person make more informed decisions with their money. So if you have a question you want to ask me directly outside the program, you can. Just go to investtalk.com. Click on Contact Steve. I answer them all day long. I will get back to you, I promise. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.